Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is the United States versus Williams. Mr. Cornea.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Reed Cornea appearing on behalf of Lamont Williams, Your Honor. Your Honors. This is a case with similarities to many cases that you've heard before, but I want to start with the basics here. As you know quite well, that 18 U.S.C. 3553 requires that a sentence should not be greater than necessary. And in determining whether or not a sentence is lawful under Booker, a court looks at the reasonable, or this court looks at the reasonableness of the sentence. In reaching a determination for a sentence, the district court itself needs to make explicit findings of fact if there are contested facts, and those facts are decisive to the choice of the sentence. Then the court must resolve those facts and those factual issues. In this case, the court simply noted my client's criminal history and did not delve deeply into the issue of the crack cocaine, powder cocaine disparity. Mr. Williams was caught with 2.8 grams of crack cocaine on him, as well as a firearm, and was charged under the drug statutes as well as 924C. Now, here's the problem. In using an example here, I would use the example of a Mr. Williams A and a Mr. Williams B. Mr. Williams A is caught with 2.8 grams of powder cocaine. Mr. Williams B is caught with 2.8 grams of powder cocaine. Well,
I think you mean crack.
Crack, sorry. And both these individuals have the exact same history. They're both carrying the exact same drug. And they are the exact same drug. There is no chemical difference other than the inclusion of baking soda to the drug. That said, Mr. Williams A, who's carrying the cocaine base, ends up getting a sentence of 45 months longer than Mr. Williams B, whose guideline range would be 21 to 27 months. There is not one ounce of scientific or rational basis for such a disparity in such a sentence. That issue was directed to the court, and the court even went as far as to agree that, yes, there is a disparity, but left it at that. And she did not go into why Mr. Williams A, with the crack cocaine, should serve 45 months longer than Mr. Williams B.
Well, but she did, Judge Crabb did seem to underscore, Ms. Cornea, the criminal history.
Exactly, and Your Honor, and that's why I brought up, they both have the exact criminal history.
Well,
so with the same criminal history, there's just no reason to sentence somebody to 45.
Well, but your hypothetical, would that suggest that Judge Crabb in one case would do one thing and one in another? Your hypothetical doesn't speak to a single jurist, I'm assuming.
So I didn't hear that.
Your hypothetical doesn't speak to a single jurist. She took this Mr. Williams and his record and recognized the disparity. It isn't a judge who's insensitive to that challenge. In fact, she seemed to be quite concerned about it.
Concerned? I wouldn't say quite, because she still sentenced him to the 20 to 1 ratio, which is still far out of line of what it should be. And one of the big...
Why should it be? That's the issue.
Well, it should be a 1 to 1 ratio because it's the exact same drug. There's no chemical difference.
Are we breaking new ground here, Mr. Cornea, or are we revisiting... Are you asking us to revisit something that's been kind of examined extensively before?
It has been examined extensively. I think Kimbrough allows us to examine it further, because Kimbrough has said that it has made the conclusion that the 101 ratio was certainly greater than necessary. And so I think that carries over. Well, why isn't the 20-to-1 ratio greater than necessary? We have the same drug.
So you say Kimbrough suggests that every ratio other than 1-to-1 is suspect?
Well, when you're dealing with the same drug, I think it is. Why are you going to sentence? And you also you have to look at the disparate impact and how that affects those who are caught with crack cocaine. Those sentenced under the crack cocaine. This goes to my my constitutional arguments. 81.4%, and you've heard these numbers before, are African American, and they are the ones who are getting sentenced to these sentences that are extremely long in comparison to white dealers dealing.
Well, do you think the Supreme Court was unaware of the constitutional dimensions when it rendered Kimbrough?
I can't. Obviously they are, but again, just I know we're dealing with the Supreme Court decisions, but the fact of the matter is that there is a disparity, and there is no reason why there shouldn't be a 1-to-1 ratio. There's no policy reasons behind it. There's no science behind it. Basically,
are policy reasons. This has been all hashed out for a long time. Look, you know, and everybody knows that this crack cocaine is highly addictive. It's easily accessible. It's much different on the street than powder. And you can argue about it, et cetera, but that's the findings, and including I know that in the next case, the Scott case, which just recently came down, and that they recite the same thing. So that's the issue. It's been debated. It went from 100 to 20, according to the sentencing guideline. But that, sure, you can debate it all the way down. But that has been, that's a law. Plus the criminal background here, criminal history. There's a lot more than just looking at which drug they're distributing.
Well, I'm going to answer that because I strongly but respectfully disagree with you. Crack cocaine is not more addictive than powder cocaine. In fact, the most addictive form of powder cocaine is the kind that you inject. This is part of the fallacies that surrounded the whole.
Well, your position appears to be that unless the sentence is based on a 1-to-1 ratio, that it has to be sent back, is that right?
I believe that is probably that should be the policy because
that's not what Kimbrough says.
Well, maybe not. But the fact of the matter is, for good policy reasons and for fairness and to deal with the disparity and the disparate and insidious impact of the crack cocaine guidelines, I think it has to be 1-to-1 for the courts to be respected.
I understand you make a constitutional argument, but Congress made pretty clear its view of this matter. And I assume the Supreme Court in Kimbrough must have had that in mind as well.
And thankfully we have Mayberry versus Madison where we don't have to, the court does not have to kowtow to the wishes of Congress.
No, your argument before a court that in a hierarchical system is not, we're not discussing a dated case, not that we are free to suggest a 1940s case is not to be followed, but Kimbrough is a relatively recent pronouncement of the high court. You know the limits of this court's capacity.
And I understand that, but the argument is, and I see I'll quickly move on, but it's based on information that has been shown to be false in regards to crack cocaine. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Klein. Mr. Dukai?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Meredith Dushman. And I do represent the appellee in this case, which is the United States. As the court knows, this is the second go-around in the appeal process for the defendant, and this appeal does follow the resentencing on the Kimbrough remand. And in this case, on remand, really the court agreed with defendant's fundamental premise, which is that there is an unfair disparity. The 100-to-1 ratio was unfair. And so the court said, well, the way I'm going to remedy that is I'm going to use the recently amended crack cocaine guidelines, and I'm going to apply basically what amounts to a two-level reduction to the base offense level. And as she did before, she took the advisory guideline range, which everybody agrees was properly calculated, and she sentenced him to the lowest end of the range. She actually did take into consideration this notion that she could vary even further. She obviously heard Mr. Cornea's arguments. They were as strongly made before the district court as they are here today. She heard them, and she said, well, I agree with you to some extent. I'm going to give him the two levels. But quite frankly, his criminal history makes me think that he has a very significant likelihood to reoffend, and I will not vary beyond that. She knew she could vary. She chose not to. That's perfectly within her discretion under Booker and Kimbrough. And so here we are again on a reasonableness review. It's hard to imagine that the court would find this more recent 111-month sentence unreasonable when the court already found the higher 123-month sentence objectively reasonable. But nevertheless, we're here again basically, I shouldn't say basically, on exactly the same arguments as on the first appeal. I think the single biggest issue that the defendant raises is that this is just really, it's just unfair. It's too harsh under the circumstances. And what he really focuses on is this notion that we're only talking about 3 grams of crack. And gosh, this is a really high sentence for somebody that had such a low quantity of crack. But, and I think the court alluded to this already, the high sentence really wasn't driven by the drug quantity here. The base offense level was only 20 based on the drug quantity. What got him way up into the advisory guideline range was his criminal history category and the fact that he chose to carry a loaded firearm with him when he distributed narcotics, which made him eligible for the 924C enhancement, which is a mandatory 60-month consecutive. And, you know, this is his fourth drug felony, and again, he's carrying a loaded gun while he's distributing crack. That's why the sentence was so high. And I don't think taking a person's criminal history category and a very egregious fact like the fact that they're carrying a loaded gun around is unreasonable when you sentence the person. And the second thing that the defendant raises again here on this appeal is that this notion that the parsimony provision requires some sort of a lower sentence. And the defendant alluded to it that a sentence should be no greater than necessary, but this court has rehashed this a number of times. It doesn't mean that the defendant can come up here and just basically play a game of name your sentence. The focus is on what the district court did and whether that sentence was reasonable. There may be another reasonable sentence out there. Maybe defendant can name it, but that's not the issue. And the last thing is this issue of the constitutionality. A defendant maintains that even the 20-to-1 ratio is unconstitutional. The court has rehashed the 100-to-1 issue and all the constitutional implications of that over and over and over and over, and always found that the ratio of 100-to-1 was unconstitutional. Well, common sense dictates that if the 100-to-1 ratio was constitutional, then a ratio that is better for defendants, the 20-to-1 ratio, would necessarily be constitutional as well. So with that, we would ask that you affirm the judgment and conviction sentence of the defendant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Cornea?
Quickly, Your Honor, I see I have a minute left. I'm going to just, the government keeps focusing on the criminal history as the driving behind as the driving mechanism behind the sentence. And that, while it increased the sentence, did not increase the sentence significantly. If we went to the 1-to-1 ratio, he would be sentenced to, at the bottom of the guideline range, to 21 months, at the top, 27. 45 months, looking at the bottom, is a significant difference. That's almost 4 years, Your Honor. That's almost 4 years. That's a significant difference. So I don't think the criminal history is driving this sentence. It is the fact that he had crack cocaine on him rather than powder cocaine. And this isn't name your sentence. We're not naming the sentence. We have presented the court with a rational basis for a sentence. And the court did not address that other than to talk about his criminal history. And I know this has been rehashed over.
You presented the 1-to-1 argument to Judge Graff.
Yes. Look, Plessy versus Ferguson was the law for a long time, Your Honor. And then we had Brown v. Board of Education. And we can cite other cases like that. And the fact of the matter is,
the Supreme Court decided Brown.
Yes.
As it did Plessy.
But it had to go up there. It had to work its way up there. And so basically what I'm saying is, when things are unfair and unjust and not based on rational thought, they should be overturned.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. Mr. Cornea, I want to give you an additional thanks for accepting the appointment in this case. Thank you. Case is taken under advisement.